Hey, everyone. I'm Tom.
And I'm JJ, and we're your hosts for this podcast.
And everything you're about to hear is based on sections of the Scrum Fieldbook, a masterclass in accelerating performance, getting results, and defining the future, available now.
So if you want even more detail, more of the strategies, more of the tactics, even more specifics of how you and your organization can transform with Scrum and Agile, pick up a copy today.
I'm going to start this podcast with a cultural story, a particularly strange one at that. Have you ever heard of cargo cults?
First of all, I just want to say, I swear I am not making this up.
JJ Sutherland, Scrum Inc. CEO and the author of the Scrum Fieldbook, is our guide.
During World War II, the U.S. Navy was island hopping, fighting the Japanese through the Pacific. And so they stopped at this one island, the nation of Vanuatu, and they built a huge, huge naval base. To the people who lived on this island, this was amazing because all of this cargo came in, you know, food, supplies, medical gear, all sorts of stuff traveled with the Americans that came in. And it was just amazing. These people had never seen anything like it before.
The ultimate time of plenty, like a string of great quarterly results. And their economic outlook was awesome. What's not to love?
And then, of course, the war ends. And all of the soldiers and sailors go home.
And those once abundant supplies, they leave with them, just like that. An instant economic depression. And here is where it gets interesting.
The people of the island were saying, well, what happened? We had all this cargo. What happened? Why did it leave? And then they integrated it into their sort of local religion, and their messiah figure, the one who was going to return the cargo, that was going to return the time of plenty, was John Frum. John Frum America.
They built John Frum fake airstrips, complete with bamboo control towers. They marched in military-like formations. They recreated everything they saw in that time of plenty as best they could, all in hopes of bringing those halcyon days back. So what happened? Exactly what you'd expect. Nothing. The cargo has never returned. Now, before you marvel at this crazy but true story, think about how it resonates with the business world today. How many organizations do you know that do the same thing? They keep doing what once worked, but no longer does, doubling down on ritualizing the old ways in hopes that they somehow, some way, will work again. The reality is that too much has changed, and those old ways of working no longer do. The average lifespan of a company on the S&P 500 in the 1950s was 60 years. That is now forecast to shrink to just 12 years by 2027. And every organization, whether startup, nonprofit, or Fortune 100 company, needs to keep up with a fast pace of change and customer demand. Otherwise, they'll fall behind their fast-moving competitors, become also-rans, start looking for their own version of John Frum, or perish outright. This is why so many organizations are choosing to go agile, choosing to use Scrum. Doing these right can seem tricky, which is why we created this podcast, to be your guide. I'm Tom Bullock, and welcome to Better Results, starting now. Episode 1. How to be agile in more than name only. First off, I want to start by laying out what you can expect from the first few episodes of Better Results Starting Now. Episode 2 will examine how management changes in an agile and Scrum organization. Episode 3 will go deep into transforming an entire enterprise. But as for this, our first episode, we begin with an easy to overlook but essential aspect that's key to organizational success today, what it really means to be agile, and how Scrum helps you get there. Because just as that cargo cult story illustrates, ritualization without an understanding of reality doesn't yield results. It's easy to be agile in name only, but if you want better results starting now, you need to understand the principles at play so you can make the right kind of change. So let's start with this.
Why should organizations go agile?
Ooh, that's a really interesting question.
Meet Henrik.
My name is Henrik Knieberg, but there's various pronunciations of it, and I'm not picky.
Henrik Knieberg coaches Agile, Scrum, and Lean, among other things, and he has helped a good number of organizations transform for the better, including what was once this little upstart music streaming service called Spotify. In fact, Henrik co-created what is now known as the Spotify model, which helped that company take on established giants like Apple, Amazon, and Google. And we'll talk more about that in an upcoming episode. But for now, we want Henrik to answer that question. Why should organizations go agile?
The ones that should, I would say, are the ones that live in a world of complexity, because that, to me, is what agile is optimized for.
And explain that to us.
As in, since agile is all about navigating complexity by, you know, handling uncertainty and creating fast feedback, all those things are extra important when you're in a world that is fast changing and there's a lot of uncertainty.
Like changing market demands, fast follower or fast moving competition, seizing market share, or an inability to bring new and right things to market, or a need to constantly innovate and quickly bring value to market in order to keep your organization thriving. These, Henrik says, are the same reasons organizations have made Scrum the most used agile framework.
The ones that I've seen that consider using Scrum are either because they're having a lot of trouble getting stuff done, or because their competitors are suddenly running circles around them and they're not sure what to do. Scrum tends to help companies move faster. So those, I guess, would be some reasons. Another reason would be if you just want to reduce waste, because Scrum is great at that, just reveals and reduces waste.
And there's an additional benefit, says Henrik, one that is at the heart of the Scrum framework.
Maybe the most immediate advantage I've seen with companies using Scrum is they get more data-driven, they get more realistic, they get they can act on what's actually going on instead of just act on speculation. If, for example, if we are in a project that is going to fail, with or without Scrum, because it's set up all wrong, with Scrum, we're likely to find out earlier that we're going to fail, and then we can do something about it.
So that covers much of the why Agile and why Scrum argument, but that is the easy part. It's the what and the how of Agile and Scrum that can get a little tricky or be misunderstood. Let's start with Agile. Agile is a mindset, something of a business philosophy which grew out of four values and 12 principles. I've posted a link to the Agile Manifesto on our podcast homepage so you can read each, but their focus is creating and delivering value fast by empowering people in teams and regularly inspecting both the thing being delivered to the market and the process used to make it so that improvements in both can be constantly made. Agile organizations require a significant structural change that stands in stark contrast with the way most organizations are set up today. They tend to use a strict hierarchy, best represented by the boxes and black lines of a classic org chart. This system dates back to the days of feudal estates, where all key decisions are made on high, orders flow down, and those doing the work aren't seen as much more than cogs. That old system may give the feeling of control, and it works to a point, but not as efficiently as it could, much like the traffic lights at an intersection, explains Henrik.
A metaphor for like a traditional manager is, to me, someone who's standing in the crossing being the traffic light. They're in control. They decide who goes when and where. The problem is that control is a bit of an illusion. Because if you then compare it, going back to the traffic metaphor, compare it to a roundabout. So in a roundabout, there's no traffic light, typically. Instead, it's based on principles of self-organization and transparency. And there are some principles, who is right away, etc. But there's no lines in the road. There's no lights. It's never exactly concrete. It's not exact. So you need to open your eyes, look around. But it turns out, you know, according to the Federal Highway Administration, there's some studies on the effectiveness and safety of these two types of crossings. Turns out that roundabouts have a lot faster flow than crossings driven by traffic lights. But they also are a lot safer. And in fact, when it comes to fatal accidents, you get 10 times fewer fatal collisions and a lot fewer collisions overall in a roundabout. So they're generally better. They're faster and safer. And I think it's a good metaphor because a good agile leader to me is someone who is not standing in the crossing holding the traffic light. Instead, they are the designer of the roundabout. So you control traffic indirectly, not by standing in the middle directing the traffic. Instead, you step to the side, design the roundabout, watch what happens. Trust, you know, give controls to the cars themselves.
So agile is a mindset which optimizes for empowerment and self-organization. Scrum is a way of working that aligns with that mindset, a lightweight framework which helps you create tight feedback loops, empower teams and organizations, and ensure you're doing what is most important no matter your industry, making the right thing and making that thing right. And these, obviously, could have a significant impact to the bottom line of any organization. Which leads us nicely to our first case study, breaking through a surgical barrier. Each episode of this podcast will feature a real-world case study addressing the topic at hand. Now, this episode is all about the structural and mindset changes needed to succeed in the modern business world, where empowering small teams is key. So our first case study takes us to a major hospital in New England, a place with Nobel winners on staff. But we're going to focus on a particular team that works there, one with an incredibly demanding job, the cleaning crew for the operating rooms.
We were brought in to solve a very specific problem. Leaders of the surgery team have found for decades that it took a really long time to turn over the operating room.
Meet Kevin Ball, one of the scrumming consultants who worked with this hospital.
So when the operation is over and they wheel out the patient, the cleaning crew has to come in and like reset that room, like perfectly clean, sterilized, and ready to go, like it was like the first operation of the morning. So it is really complicated.
Adding to that complexity is the nature of surgery itself. Different operations produce more or less mess.
And if an emergency happens in the operating room, you know, things get thrown all over the place.
Everything needs to be disposed of properly, cleaned, sanitized to an exacting standard, and all the surgical instruments reset for the next operation. It's a big job that has to be done exactly right every time. On average, it was taking the crew around 70 minutes to do all this. And this wheels out, wheels in time, as it's known, the time from when the last patient was wheeled out and the next one can be wheeled in, had remained around 70 minutes for decades. Now, think about it. If that time was reduced, it greatly increases the capacity of the exact same operating rooms. It means the hospital can treat more people. Those patients have better outcomes because they don't have to wait as long. And yeah, the hospital itself makes more money because they can perform more surgeries. All of that, from patient outcomes to revenue, is in the hands of the cleaning crew. They were doing the work that needed to be done, yet nobody was giving them the autonomy to change and improve how they did what they did until they used Scrum, says Kevin Ball.
We discovered that they had a few solutions in their head that they never talked about. For example, swarming two or three people on one area of the operating room at the same time. They were working in the same room, but they were, you know, working in silos. They were doing their individual thing. And they brought the idea up and said, hey, why don't we both clean that light together and perhaps we can shave some time. And let's do a few other moves in the room together versus just doing our individual things to reduce that time.
As they continued this process of inspection and adaptation, the turnaround time dropped, then dropped some more. They started looking into things big and small, from the placement of the trash containers to the way surgical teams coordinated between operations to when the next patient began their trip to the OR. Soon, Kevin says, the number of people he was working with grew.
We need to include the head surgeon. We need to include the nurse in charge. We need to include the floating nurse. We need to include the anesthesiologist. And we need to include the cleaning crew. So this was a cross-functional team.
A cross-functional team that was agile in mindset and Scrum in practice. And what were the results? The average turnaround time was cut in half, from 70 minutes to around 33 or so. And not just that day or for a few days following. This is now their routine, their norm. Same staff, same tools, same facility, same exacting standards. The only thing that changed was the way they worked. The quick feedback loops, inspection, and adaptation that Scrum enables has allowed the hospital staff to keep improving and innovating continuously, long after the consultants have left. Empowered teams that were doing the work are now making the decisions that matter. And as that structure changed, the process improved. By using Scrum to be agile, they were able to greatly increase the capacity of their operating rooms. Oh, and this whole project, this thing they hadn't been able to do for decades, it took just 2 weeks from start to finish. Joining me now to talk more about agile structure is Scrum Inc. CEO and best-selling author J.J. Sutherland. And J.J., in the Scrum Fieldbook, you have a chapter titled Structure is Culture. Explain that to me.
Well, let me give you an example. So the Rijksmuseum, which is in Amsterdam, so it's an awesome museum if you've ever seen it. Back in the 90s, it was organized by type of art. So there would be the people who are the curators of the pottery, the painting, the sculpture. So you'd go into one gallery and there would be, okay, here's a Dutch painting from, the 12th century to the 19th century. Then you go into the next gallery, it goes, okay, here's sculpture from the 12th century to the 19th century. Then you go to the next gallery, here's, ceramics from the 12th. Because they were organized by specialty. There are the people who are experts in sculpture, and they ran the sculpture hall, and the people who are experts in painting, and they ran the painting gallery. So in the early 2000s, they had a new director come in, and they decided to refurbish the museum and really do a huge update. And he decided, well, instead of having all the organizational structure, because think about it, they had replicated their organizational structure in the building. It was physically replicated. And so what he did is says, well, that doesn't really make any sense from the point of view of someone visiting the museum. Because in art, in any era of art, it's not like only the painters painted and only the sculptors. They're all talking to each other. So he set up these cross-functional teams that were able to create galleries with all the kind of art from the 17th century, all the kind of art from the 18th century, to organized by time rather than type.
So one of the things you bring up with the museum is they broke down the silos, they broke down the specialties, and they formed these cross-functional teams. Can you explain exactly what a cross-functional team is and why it matters?
A cross-functional team has all the skills necessary to deliver something of value. Like if you're making a software product, you would have a software developer, you might have a tester, you might have a design person. But what you really want in a team is all the skills necessary to deliver the product or service or whatever you're doing, or museum, without talking to anyone else. Because in a perfect world, each team could go from idea to execution completely independently. So your organizational structure can really dictate how and what you do. The culture emerges from the structure, because organizations, just like teams and just like people, are emergent phenomenon, because they're what's called a complex adaptive system. Now, complex adaptive systems, which have brought a whole new area of science, complexity studies, they are systems where you don't know how the system works unless it's actually in motion.
And structure, that organizational structure, can and does work its way into products. Whatever a company or an organization creates or does, explain that.
So there is this concept called Conway's Law. And Conway was an engineer who came up with this years ago, which was organizations which create products will replicate their communication structure in the products themselves. So if you have a rigid, hierarchical, and siloed organization, your product will be rigid. It'll be hard to change. It will be tightly coupled. And so the classic example that Conway used is if you have four teams working separately on a compiler for software, you will have a four-pass compiler, which means it'll go through the code four times completely independently. And I've seen this in things like rockets. I've seen this in things like on cars. And what you really want to do is figure out a way you can modularize your organization so you can modularize your products or services so that way each individual team, each individual cross-functional team can deliver independently. Because what happens when you have to have a lot of handoffs between different parts of an organization, that's where things break. That's where things fall apart. That's where things fail.
And it's called Conway's Law for a reason, I assume. This has been replicated. This has been shown to be true?
Over and over and over and over.
Huh. There's also another bit of research, another observation, similar to Conway's Law. And that's the research done by Al Shalloway.
So Shalloway is a legendary figure in the Agile community. And he's had a number of different companies. But what he says is when you change the way a team is working and trying to deliver in a different way, your organizational structure will fight with you about it. Because the team, you're changing the communication pathways, your structure will try to stop you.
So it's almost like a body reacting to an infection.
Absolutely. Often people call it a cuckoo effect. Anytime, any new innovation in a company and changes how people are working is going to stimulate this immune response to seek it out and destroy it.
So what should an organization do to their structure in order to boost their throughput, whatever that might be?
Well, the first thing you want to realize is that, as I said earlier, that structure is emergent. So what you want to do is, this is what I recommend to our clients, is you want to figure out, okay, what's a pilot we can do? Because if you do this all at once, I've seen that work twice. Most of the times if you do, completely change every single person in the company overnight, things kind of fall apart. So you want to create, have a pilot because you want to be able to get some sort of reference model. Like, how is Scrum going to work in our company? So you cut aside a project or product or whatever you're doing, but you want it to be independent. So you have that full value chain from idea to execution, from concept to cash within, one team or multiple teams or dozens of teams. And as they do Scrum, your organizational problems will become visible to you. And they will show you what structure you have that stops people from delivering quickly. The breaks in the system, the friction, the ability to deliver quickly.
The impediments.
Exactly. So those impediments will be revealed, and often those impediments are part of your organizational structure. Your organizational structure itself is an impediment, almost always, to getting stuff out the door.
What are the common pitfalls, JJ, that companies face when they are trying to implement Agile or Scrum, and how can they avoid them?
So the most common reason Scrum fails is product owners. You have to have really good product owners. They have to be able to prioritize. They have to have those priorities stick. They have to be able to spend, about half their time with the customers or stakeholders and about half their time with the team expressing what the customers and stakeholders want through backlog items. Now, if you have a company that doesn't empower them, or doesn't let them spend enough time. It's like, oh, you're a busy executive, but we're going to make you a product owner too. And the other 12 hours of the 80-hour week you're working, that's where things fall apart. Another way that things fail is when people lean too far. Now, lean is about getting something through the system as fast as can. We talk about impediments, but lean is often, it comes from manufacturing, which is, How do you make that manufacturing process both fast, but just enough parts, just enough people, just enough inventory, so you don't have any waste or backups through the system, so there's a smooth flow through the system, which is really great. Lean principles are awesome. But I have seen companies lean too far so there's no slack in the system, and if they need to change, they can't. They've leaned out the ability to innovate. One company I'm thinking of is a global manufacturing company, and they make chemical products. So they had this product, which was incredibly successful. It was used in cell phones, and everyone wanted it, and it was incredibly successful for them. And then, cell phones change. And all of a sudden, the cell phone manufacturers wanted a different kind of product than the one they were making. And they're like, oh, we have to completely retool. We have to come up with it. We have to completely change how we're building it, how we're making it, and how we're manufacturing it. And said, oh, that's going to take us like a year to figure that out. Well, a competitor of theirs was much more agile, was able to do it in a few months. And so they lost all of that business, which was hundreds of millions of dollars, because they couldn't change fast enough.
I'm Tom Bullock, and next week we explore the role of management in an agile organization and how and why it changes. It's an important step if you want to see better results starting now.